Hey everyone, welcome back to Untangled Vines, Redefining the Rules of Work podcast. Today we have a special guest who embodies the spirit of entrepreneurial innovation and work-life balance, Barbara Turley from The Virtual Hub. Barbara is a mom-first entrepreneur who has not only bootstrapped, but also scaled a 350-employee digital-first virtual assistance company with a global client base. Remarkably, she's achieved this while attending toddler ballets, kids' ski club, and play dates, splitting her life between the majestic mountains of Europe and the beautiful beaches of Australia. The question everyone asks Barbara is, how the hell did you do that? And her answer is simple yet profound. By focusing on building great systems, nailing process delegation, and leveraging offshore team of virtual assistants in the Philippines. Platforms, processes, people. Barbara sees countless great companies filled with talented individuals being bogged down by the vortex of busy work. From small businesses with just 5 employees to large organizations with 500. The story is the same. Exceptional people hindered by necessary but inefficient and time-consuming tasks. By identifying the 20 to 50% of people's workday consumed by admin and process-driven tasks, Barbara helps businesses strategically optimize their human capital budgets by delegating to offshore virtual assistants. From e-commerce and SaaS to coaching and services businesses, Barbara's company, The Virtual Hub, unlocks business growth by freeing up valuable time for their customers. They provide fully managed, in-house trained, and dedicated virtual assistants starting at just $750 US dollars per month. By integrating these support assistants into your business, the Virtual Hub becomes a bolt-on scaling partner to your growth plans. So join us today as we explore Barbara's inspiring journey, gain insights on building and scaling a business, and learn how to leverage virtual assistants to optimize business operations. Let's welcome Barbara Turley to the Untangled Vines community. Let's get started. And welcome back to another episode of Untangled Vines, Redefining the Rules of Work. Today, we got a special guest, Barbara Turley from The Virtual Hub. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us on the Untangled Vines podcast.
Great to be here, Zach. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And just to let people know, where are you calling from?
I am calling from Sydney, Australia, despite not being Australian, if people can pick my accent up. But I am in lovely Sydney, Australia, very early in the morning for you, Zach. I've had my coffee and I'm ready.
Good, good. You might have answered the question of a lightning round later on, but we'll go ahead and start with the somewhat of an introduction here. But I know that you're a mom first entrepreneur. That's kind of how you describe yourself. Scaling a digital first virtual assistant company while balancing family life and globetrotting. It's truly inspiring. I've kind of followed your journey a little bit on LinkedIn. This is the first time that we're meeting, but reflecting on your experience, how do you see the workplace shifting to accommodate the demands of the future of work, especially in terms of flexibility and remote capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, I've been doing this for a decade now. So I was kind of doing the digital first remote type structure long before it was cool, long before COVID made it mandatory. But I still see one of the challenges I see, and I'm sure you would see this as well. I still see companies are not set up in the right operational way to really make it work. And they're sort of, it's failing for a multitude of reasons. Not everyone's failing at it. There's some great companies doing great stuff. Obviously, Atlassian is like the trailblazer in it. But, you know, when I look at the way that I built the Virtual Hub, for me, it was built this way out of necessity because I wanted very much to be a hands-on mom. I also was living in Australia at the time, but I had a wish to potentially move back to Europe where I'm originally from. So I needed something I could bring in my pocket, so to speak, and do from anywhere. So, you know, I did it that way, but I still see companies struggling to realize that it's not just remote or hybrid. It's actually the way that you set the company up. It has to be digital first in order to then make remote or make distributed teams kind of a completely frictionless experience, and therefore make location kind of irrelevant, is what I think, and take it out of the conversation as opposed to it being front and center of the conversation.
Yeah. And we were talking before, we're obviously on board with that, because we think that it's great to get in person every once in a while, but to actually have the office be mandatory, we even see it turning off people, and even some of the top people in companies are leaving if someone mandates a return to office policy. Yeah. So I kind of have some, I've constructed some questions that we're going to be going through today. And after I was reviewing some of the topics, I kind of call it the five stages of becoming future of work ready. Mm-hmm. So we'll go through this and you can tell me if that's correct. But just speaking of, because you kind of tapped into it a little bit, but navigating the future of work is kind of topic number one. And given your unique journey, I just wanted to see what insights can you share about changing landscape of work and how businesses are adapting to meet the demands of the future, particularly in accommodating flexible work arrangements. Like, how do you do that at the virtual hub internally, but then also for the clients that you work with?
Wow, there's so much I can unpack in this. I'm going to try and sort of start at the beginning. So I think this first I would say is that the challenges are on both sides. So I think where the debate gets a little lost online is that, you know, the companies that are sort of mandating back to the office have challenges with how this is working. And employees not wanting to go back to the office have challenges with that. But actually, the answer is kind of in the middle, which is the same answer for everyone, in that it's the way that we work and how we work that is actually fundamentally the problem. So from a company perspective, a lot of them are not set up in the right way, like I just said. So, you know, the shifts that need to happen are things like, you know, we're used to seeing people in the office or having meetings, you know, all of the stuff that's being talked about online, really having lots of meetings, tapping someone on the shoulder, everybody's in the office on a Tuesday, water cooler, all that sort of thing. But what's missing in a lot of companies is this idea that, and this speaks to kind of what you guys are doing at Grapevine. You know, I swear I'm not being paid for this, but I do fundamentally believe, and it's how I found you, is that we do need to create an environment, a virtual environment in the cloud where people show up to work, do work, collaborate on work, and are seen.
Yeah. Because
visibility online is a major problem. Now, one of the things I think people who are demanding remote don't realize is that the level of visibility and transparency that a company needs in order to have trust and to make sure that all of these things actually work is much higher than when we're in the office. Okay. So people working remotely go into a bit of a black hole, and they don't realize that once you go remote, you're kind of in the black hole and nobody can see anything. So it's fundamentally very important that employees understand this, but also that companies understand you need to build the operational architecture and the documentation, the platforms, the processes, and the system of how we're going to now work for a digital first environment. And that goes a long way to start to clear the emotional issues that both sides are facing around lack of visibility, lack of transparency, and the fear that that brings up. And everyone's afraid to kind of talk about that because nobody wants to be seen as a micromanager. Nobody wants to be seen as lacking trust. It's not really about that. It's just this black hole problem where everything becomes a little opaque. And opacity is not a great thing to foster trust.
Yeah. And we see that in studies. We do every single week, unless we're busy, we do a Future of Work weekly report. And we see that throughout the studies where transparency helps create trust. Consistent updates, just so the employees feel like they understand what's going on in the organization. And what I always say ever since kind of becoming a remote work pioneer, so to speak, is that whenever it comes to working remotely, you have to be very intentional on how you're working with your employees. But how, like you mentioned micromanaging, how do you balance that? Because I do think that, like, in the office, they used to say management by observation or walk by management, which I think is terrible. If you have a disagreement, like let's talk about it. I like that.
I think you can walk by. I think you can walk by people that are actually doing nothing and delivering nothing, and they look like they're really busy, right? And we've all worked with those people, right? We all know who they are. So
Yeah. Or in another sense of the word, and we can even see this in remote, where people are good at promoting themselves and they're not actually doing the work. So I guess the question that I'm trying to think of is how do you balance the micromanagement aspect, because you're really just trying to check in on your team and seeing, do they have what they need? Are they making progress? Are they performing in the way that the goal towards our goals? How do you kind of balance that being remote? Because I know you kind of have to let go of control a little bit, but the way to overcome that might be micromanagement. So how do you kind of balance that?
Yeah, so the control thing is interesting. Everybody thinks you need to let go control. Mm-hmm. Control's a funny thing, because the word the word control has a connotation for a lot of people of micromanagement, but it's actually not. There's like, micromanaging is a different thing. It's looking over someone's shoulder, it's changing everything, and we're all guilty of doing that in certain ways, especially as entrepreneurs. I mean, it's, you know, we're, it's our baby, but active management is a different thing. So micromanaging is one thing. Active managing is actually taking an active role in the fact that we have a top-down vision and mission that we're going for. We have top-down company goals, and I'm a big fan of objectives and key results. Anyone who's not in that, doing that, when you're in remote, this is a game changer, right? It's an absolute game changer to roll this out, and you can Google that and look up what that's about. But really, from that top-down approach, you have to kind of design the entire architecture. And like I said, like, platform is one thing, which is the space you're in. And look, you know, Asana, Monday.com, all these, like, the SAT, the tools, right?
Yeah.
Slack, you know, but they don't, the tool doesn't make a digital first company. So you need 100%. The right architecture in terms of platform. You need to design what that looks like. And then you need the process part, which is, people think that's process mapping is around individual processes and tasks. It's not, it's entire systems. It's how we use the tools. So a classic, for example, I'm going off on lots of tangents here, but
no, that's, we like tangents. Problem,
a classic problem that I see is, well, you know, our marketing team like Asana, and then our other team like this, and our other team use that. I'm like, that's wonderful for them. That is terrible from a company perspective, right? So you need to actually all, as a team and as a culture and as a company, come together and realize that we need to row the boat in the same direction, with the same type of oars and the same speed, in order to achieve, you know, the mission that we're on. Now, we can have lots of people running off and working in different ways. We can have lots of different personalities, and we don't need to be controlling fully how people work, but we need to control and have some sort of structure and a system that people can then go in and paint their canvas on, if so, so to speak. So you give flexibility within a structure. You need to have some form of structure. And that goes from top down to bottom up, if I could describe it that way. So top down structure is designing the architecture, designing the objectives and key results that, you know, company-wide and cross-departmentally, and then making sure that all the projects and the work and the pipelines and the stuff that people are working on, everything in the company can be connected actually to a key result. So everyone in this company knows what they're working towards. Now, in that environment, then we're either like all a sort of a COO or an entrepreneur or a CEO kind of needs to know at that point is, are we on track or off track? And if we're off track, what's the roadblock?
Yeah.
And that's where the status updates become really, really important, because what we're trying to achieve is, people think, oh, they're just checking, am I doing the work? No, we're checking for the roadblocks to the milestones, to the results, because potentially someone in a higher position might be able to clear a roadblock very quickly.
Yeah.
For you in your role. So, and then it lends to this visibility, transparency issue when you're doing it this way. So it's just about thinking of the actual design and the construct of how we're working. And then once you have that, and I find this, like, our team can just go off and do their thing. I mean, because we have a structure for the transparency and visibility. And when new people come in and they don't quite get that, and they're not on board yet, the black hole exists. Literally, I've had people go into a black hole, and I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that here. You know? So, because otherwise we really have no idea what's happening or what's going on.
Yeah. And you're speaking my language. I don't know if you, I don't think I told you, but the last company that I worked for, I ran our OKR program.
Oh,
and
we were 100%, didn't know that.
Yeah. And we were 100% remote. And honestly, I'm a huge believer of OKRs exactly for the reason that you're talking about. And like, if somebody's listening and they don't know what OKRs are, it's like the reason that I love it is because every single thing, like you said, is attached to the strategy or the company vision. Yes. Like, what are we trying to achieve? Whether you say, okay, this is our company vision, and then here's our strategy, the next layer down. So what are we trying to achieve this year? And then you break those down into quarterly goals, depending on how you want to do it. But the way alignment. That we did it.
It's top down, bottom up alignment. And, exactly. And then there's no confusion about, and then you can say, see this project here, let's kill that. That's actually not contributing. And somebody's or you could go deep in the weeds and go, why is this project not contributing? That process that person is executing there is old world. Like, it needs to be revamped. It's not getting the results we think it should. And those are conversations then you can have with your manager, and it makes the manager layer far more effective and less micromanaging. And they actually then feel as managers like they can achieve something. So it's a leadership tool as well. So you're right. OKRs are, we could talk for hours about this, but literally a game changer. Difficult to bring in, takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
But a game changer for any company. And if I can share, I already, like, it literally cleared 70% of meetings out of my calendar. My calendar's empty. So it's great.
Exactly. like we were talking about managing by observing earlier. I felt like I managed by OKRs because I would bring it up in the 101s. I would bring it up in the team meetings. Since I was running the OKR program, like, I would bring it in a company all hands and make sure that we were all understanding what they were and then also how to do them. And so, like, I actually had another company as a consulting company where we focused on OKR consulting. And so we would come into an organization and we would teach people how to implement OKRs. And I think like obviously with Untangled Vines, we're focusing on remote work and future of work. And like you said, if you are a remote organization, especially 100% remote, OKRs are going to help you balance that micromanaging piece because it's almost like each time that you speak to that individual or that team, you're talking to them about performance because it's tied to their OKRs. So it's like employee performance mixed with, are we achieving our strategy? So it's the best of both worlds. Well,
it also creates, like, so KPIs are kind of an interesting thing. People get confused between OKRs and KPIs and targets and stuff. And I have found what OKRs have done for us really, really beautifully is it creates a great bouncing off ground for conversation at a team level, at a performance level. And it's not like, oh, we're now going to review what your performance was over the last year. It's in the trenches with you going, yeah, that's not really working. Let's think about what solution could we come up with to meet this target or to meet this result or to drive this further. And it's a more exciting conversation because there's collaboration built right into the core of that. So I think where we're getting to with this whole conversation is that, like, I call this, people are talking about the future of work. I'm like, this is the future of business. I mean, this is how businesses need to be constructed in this new world. And since, you know, it's been happening for a decade, COVID absolutely speeded it up. But there's a moment in time now where if we don't kind of keep driving this conversation, then, you know, there is a wish to run back to the old world. But I do understand that from some company perspectives because they don't have this architecture. And it takes a bit to build it. You're talking about real architecting a lot of different things inside companies. And I think employees who want remote need to understand that that's actually the friction point. And you know, we need to get there, but it is going there. It will get there. Yeah. It's going to take another 5 years, you know?
No, I 100% agree. And I think, like, you are so right where if we don't have the pioneers like yourself, I would throw myself in there, maybe a little too early to call that, but we'll say it for now. But if we don't have these future of work pioneers that are driving the new landscape or the new frameworks that we're going to leverage, then we will go back eventually to the traditional 9-to-5. And I know this isn't on our questions, but you call yourself a mom entrepreneur first. And so if we go back to the 9-to-5 traditional normal, then we're actually leaving a lot of people behind, right? Because in the studies, that I've seen, I know that like people of color have a better experience if they're either remote or flexible. I know mothers have a better experience because they aren't as likely to have a gap in their resume if they can work from home. Because unfortunately, I don't know how we want to word this, but the mom is still considered the caretaker.
Totally. Yeah.
And so what is your thoughts on that? In that kind of framework.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I'm so passionate. I mean, the reason I left corporate, I was in corporate for 15 years. I mean, and I left because at my core, and look, high five to all the corporate moms out there. I mean, you ladies, the corporate moms, you are doing an incredible job that I don't think I would have been able for. And I decided that I didn't want to tread that path because I thought, I don't really want to leave my house at 7 a.m. and arrive home at 7 p.m., which is kind of, and you get maybe half an hour of storybook time and that's it. I wanted to be very present. Now, some moms don't want to do that. That's okay too. But I actually did. I wanted to be very present. So I needed to design something that worked for me. And like I said, that really worked for me. Now, having said that, anyone listening out there, you need to be very clear that, being a remote employee or having a remote job does not mean that you can have the kids running around you all the time. We need to be clear on that. Like, you do still need, potentially a nanny or daycare and things like that around it. But I was able to kind of mold the two together. And I was able to go to the toddler ballet class. I did have a nanny that helped me out, but not all the time. And I was able to structure my work around what the needs were of my family. And that I have loved doing that, even though it has placed a lot of pressure on me too. But that's a key thing, that the reason I did this. And I'm very passionate about kind of talking about, having been, one of those categories of people that you talk about, like the moms. I mean, I know there's people who are potentially, transgender or, all sorts of different things, different flavors of the rainbow that actually prefer, to work in their own communities or be around their own people while still working for amazing companies. And I think, it lends itself very well to all of those things, but if it's done right. And that's why we need the pioneers to be out talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you specifically focus on anything like that, like whenever you're hiring? And I know this is off topic 100%,
that's okay. Yeah.
But because I know that diversity, equity, inclusion kind of gets a bad rep now, especially in America. For some reason it's woke now, not to get political, but like, what are your thoughts on that, and how do you kind of overcome that, or is there a certain method that you leverage?
I actually have a lot to say on this topic.
Let's hear it.
I can't stand gender diversity targets. I think it is a terrible way to approach things. So the way we do it is you have to make diversity become a byproduct of how you recruit. Okay. So what you obviously want to do is be magnetically attracting the right people with your culture and all those sorts of things. But realistically, where the problem occurs is in the recruitment process. Now, this wouldn't work at every company, but at our company, I can only speak to what we do.
Yeah.
So we have designed a recruitment process where name, resume, and interview are last. So we actually have like people coming in sort of fairly anonymously into a testing environment online. It's all remote.
Oh, cool.
And we're putting them through. So we've built it's a pretty robust thing now. We're always refining it. And it's actually pretty rough because what you're trying to do is extract the best talent, right? Now, the best talent comes in all shapes and sizes, all colors, all sorts of, as again, flavors of the rainbow. And what we have found is that we have ended up with quite a naturally diverse population. Because the best people end up showing up in the interview.
Yeah.
And then, we do obviously have to do interviews, but we've ended up with a beautifully diverse, like I was in the Philippines a few weeks ago and I literally looked around the room and I said to one of my colleagues there, I was like, look at this room. I was like, we've got everyone from the most flamboyant, colorful people to like quite professional corporate sort of feeling, introverted type people and all sorts of different flavors. And that is not really, I won't say by accident, but we didn't go out with targets to try to find those people. We just went out to try to find the best people and let them rise to the top. So I just feel that, again, when we try to put targets or we try to make things, you try and falsely structure something to get the results you want like that. That's when it becomes a kind of a woke thing where people are like, I don't know, is that, that's like saying we should hire more of these types of people because they are. And it almost feels like you're saying, because poor them, they're lesser.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than let's just find the smartest people.
Yeah.
And the smartest people come in all shapes and sizes and colors and flavors.
Exactly.
You know, so that's my view. I'm very passionate about that, actually.
Yeah, and it reminds me of, so we just dropped the Future of Work weekly report for this week, and in the article that I read was surprised, there was a call out that was surprising to me, where whenever it became part of the interviewing process, the thing that companies lack interviewing on or even assessing is a cultural fit. And so it sounds like you're more focused on the cultural fit in the sense of like the culture that you guys have built, and are they going to be able to move the company forward in the right direction?
Yeah.
And so basically it's like you said, we're finding the right talent based off of what we need, but also they fit in our culture. Is that appropriate?
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, cause we're big on culture. I mean, culture is everything in a company. Like, you know what, we're huge people. I mean, every company is a people company really, but we're pretty people heavy. Culture is something that, oh, wow. Culture takes a lifetime to build in some ways and can be broken overnight. So you've got to really, you've got to treat culture like, you know, it's the newborn child that you hold in your hands and you have to hold it close to your heart. Yeah, really. Yeah. Deeply, so.
So speaking of culture, just to segue perfectly, how do you build a culture remotely? Because I know that we were talking about being intentional, having the right processes, the right systems in place. How do you, specifically at the Virtual Hub, create culture without kind of missing a step, even if it's remotely, or especially if it's remotely?
So first of all, it's, I think, one of the most difficult things to do. Mm-hmm. So you have to be intentional about it. So you can't just go, well, our culture is that our people are friends or whatever. It's culture is really, I suppose, what is it? Only it's a set of beliefs and behaviors around the mission. And like, you have to attract people that are actually bought into your mission. Now, that's not that easy to do. People can say they are, but actually they're not, they realize later they're not. And like, there's all sorts of issues with that. But I think the main point is you have to be intentional about it. And what that means is you must put resourcing behind it. You must put energy and financial behind it. We've built an entire employee engagement and experience team. And what we do is we have an entire separate sort of thing that, of course, within our teams, we have talks and conversations. So we have an entire initiative around our conversation rhythms and what we're talking to people about. But we also have to get people together physically. That's really both virtually and physically. So we have like online sort of almost cabaret show style parties and stuff. We do.
Oh, that's awesome.
We do hybrid events. So I was in the Philippines recently, like I said, and we ran a massive town hall that was half live, half hybrid because we brought a load of people in. I did it live. I was there with the whole team and it was like a party. But then we had it online. We were streaming it live into our Facebook group as well. We have a Facebook group where we bring everyone together.
Nice.
A bit old school on the Facebook group, but it actually has worked for us over the years where we're all together in there.
Yeah.
We stream things live in there and we run like, we gamify the whole thing. So it's not just me talking. It's like all sorts of things going on with raffle prizes, and we do like, food drops out to people, and we've got this great thing in the Philippines where you can just like send food deliveries out to people really quickly, and it's pretty cool actually. So we do that, but then we also we ask the people. So it's really, really important not to try to make this up. So people go, what should we do? I'm like, I have no idea. Why don't we ask the people what they think?
Yeah,
because actually, how would I know, right? So I find a lot of companies trying to fabricate culture without actually involving everyone, and we involve all 350 people. Now, does it take work? Yes. There's surveys, there's questions, there's polls. We run live polls in the town halls around new things we want to do. You know, so, and then having chats with people. So I randomly go around and just book little calls with VAs or with team members. And I ask them like, how is it? What do you think? And all sorts of interesting stuff comes out. So for example, We launched a thing last year called the Munch and Mingle. And this was designed because one of our VAs said to me, I was talking to him about something else. And I said, you know, how is it now? He used to work in the office years ago. And he was like, okay. You know, I love working from home. It is great. He goes, the only thing is, I used to kind of like the way our company's quite large. And he was like, I used to kind of like the way you'd always meet new people coming in. There was always new people and the office was kind of like that. So I developed this idea. I said, what about if we get random strangers together, technically random strangers?
Yeah.
And every month we run a dinner for 10. Now we run them in different locations now, and we have an invite that goes out and it's, you know, whoever RSVPs. And it's like 10 people show up to this dinner together. Man. And it's nothing to do with work. It's not a team building event or anything. It's purely to get random people coming together over conversation and food. And that's been quite a lovely experience. We're going to do more of that now. We're launching a club version where people who love to play basketball can come and do that together. Man. And we run. And then, like, you have to have online as well. So, like, one thing we do really well, which I love, is we have this online gaming tournament that happens every year online. Because in the Philippines, I mean, gaming's big everywhere. But we run an actual online and we stream it live. And it's a gaming tournament.
It's like your own personal Twitch stream.
Yeah, where there's teams and everything playing against each other live. And it's very cool. So, and we have the Battle of Brilliance. And we have, so it's very intentional. We have created an entire team that actually run and come up with these ideas. And it's designed to foster connection between human connection, even when we are hybrid and remote.
Yeah. And just as you're speaking, well, one, I'm thinking about Grapevine. But then two, I'm just thinking like a lot of what would you say to people who think that this type of stuff that you're talking about is unimportant because it has nothing to do with business? Because this is one of my pet peeves where we know through the, and I know I keep referring to studies and all that kind of stuff, but my undergraduate was in psychology with an emphasis on organizational psychology. And then I did my thesis paper on the happy productive worker thesis. And one of the things that I learned from there was the job characteristics model. And it's all these different things that come into play that are beyond just the responsibilities or the job duties of that specific person. But it whenever culture is involved, you actually see satisfaction rise, you see productivity rise, you see the connection between the manager and the employee become better, the teams there's less silos. So I won't keep going, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things that came to mind. I'm also a big fan of OKRs, but also scaling up. The scaling up methodology is sort of what we have followed massively with OKRs built in. And in that, they talk a lot about, and the people pillar of the scaling up methodology is phenomenal. So like I kind of built a lot of things from that. So we have our set of core values, but one of our core values is we take fun seriously. Now,
like
the reason we put that in there is because work needs to be fun, right?
Yes.
I know some people would disagree with this. I'm like, you need to come to work and love the people you work with. And you don't have to, you know, you don't have to love everyone, but you need to feel that actually you really enjoy your job. Because then on the tough days, there's going to be tough days. That's what's going to get you through the tough days, right? Not having, you know, having a supportive manager and all that's great, but having fun, great teammates, and even online, you've got to try to create that connection. So that's number one. So fun comes first, right? Then what we've got to do is, again, be very intentional about how do we plug fun into the way that we, so how do we kind of hide pockets of work and updates of what we're doing as a company, et cetera, into the fun environment. So like I said, we run these town halls, which are mostly virtual because we're all virtual, but they actually, we inject fun into them. So I will come on and speak about our OKRs. I'll speak about how the company's doing. And then we'll have like, we have hosts and everything. So it's like a TV show. And then the hosts come in and they do raffle prize draws and everyone's in the comments, like we ask questions. And of course, we plant things that we want in there. So GDPR, like, cybersecurity is a pretty boring topic, but it's pretty important in our industry. So what we do is we will plant, like, we'll give out prizes and everything for like the first 10 answers that are correct in this thing. And we'll ask something around cybersecurity, which we have trained on.
Yeah.
But what we're doing there is we're introducing gamification. So we try to bring gamification and fun and connectivity and a bit of a laugh into everything that we do, even when it's bad news. We're like, you know, let's say one of our, you know, one of our results is bad. Like, we'll have all these sound gigs in there going boo, like, and, you know, everyone and then we start to talk about what we're going to do about it. And then we'll run like live polls on the screen and we'll ask funky questions and have to inject. Again, it's so intentional. And then you have to make sure, this is the problem, you always need to be upping the game a bit or changing it or putting surprise and delight in there. Now, that's the bit that gets hard the more that you do it. So like, how do you keep putting surprise and delight in there? Mm-hmm. And it's design. Like I keep talking about this, like you need to design your operational architecture, but you also need to design how we're going to inject human connection, human fun, you know, get people to laugh and like connect with the heart. You've got to be intentional about that too. It's a lot of work. But you need to have resourcing behind it because you can't do it yourself as the CEO, but you can drive it. So I drive it from the top, but and I insist on it. But I have teams now that, and they look like the team that does it. Like I just go blank canvas, off you go, come back with your ideas. You know,
man, that you know it's crazy because it's a it's also a marketing tool for your talent acquisition, because the way that you're describing this, if I was a listener, and I am because I'm listening to you speak about it for the first time, and it's like literally the words in my head was, I want to work there. You know?
Yeah, I think we could do it. I think, look, you know, the way when you run the company, you always think, yeah, we could do this a lot better. We do it quite well, but I think we're bad at actually promoting our, so inside the heart of the virtual hub is something we're trying to, we're now create, like we've got a video team and we're trying to create coverage of this so that people can actually see it.
Yeah.
Because I do think even for clients, you know, like when clients come to us looking for remote virtual assistants, one of their key questions, apart from things like how's their English and stuff like that, which like, again, nobody wants to ask that, but it's a valid question, right?
Yeah.
But what they actually really want to know is business owners and people trying to grow companies, they have enough to worry about. There's enough stresses and overwhelms, as we know, right? There's enough stresses and overwhelms that you don't want to have to worry about, is my person who's with me on my team in the Philippines, are they okay? Like, are they, so we create culture for them. We create that vibe that maybe a smaller company can't do. They don't have the time and the resourcing to make sure that this VA sitting 10,000 kilometers away, you know, on their own at home is actually has culture. We provide that. That's what the virtual hub is. We create that for that person so that the client doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And, or they can also, we facilitate culture for them, so we can organize, if they have a team with us, we'll facilitate organizing, making sure that that team has team buildings going on and goes out for dinner and has events that they're part of that the client might want to do as well, like birthday cakes and celebrations and things like that. So we take the heavy lifting of that for the client.
Was there ever a time that you didn't do this, or was it always from the beginning?
In the very early days, no, we didn't do any of it. I mean, I've sort of learned this from, actually, that's an interesting question. Yes, in the early days, no, we didn't do any of this. I mean, it was just like, hey, you want a VA? Great, there's a VA. Okay, we'll handle the payroll. And, you know, and it was just very transactional, I think. Relationship is everything. And actually, that circles us back to this whole point of remote. We need to get remote right.
Yeah.
And, you know, but we need to remember that the future is human.
The
human is actually the bit that we need to foster. Even in an AI-driven world, we need to be very careful that actually, let's not forget that actually the future is human. And we need to create human connections and actually have that as one of our key objectives as any company. And I wasn't doing that in the beginning at all, but I learned through trial and error and through listening to problems and watching churn rates rise, you know, employee engagement scores be low and retention issues and all the stuff that's talked about online of like, how do we get employee engagement up? How do we stop our attrition levels? How do we keep and retain our best talent? Well, some of that is culture. A lot of it, though, is how we work. And another part of it is taking overwhelm. And I'm going off topic here a little bit, but like I fundamentally believe a lot of companies globally are doing all of those things right and still having problems with retention. And the final piece of the puzzle is saying that's because you know, your key people that you're paying a lot of money to are spending anywhere from 20 to 60% of their day doing stuff that could be process mapped and delegated to an amazing support assistant that we do. And you could free their time and energy to actually do the work that really moves the needle and really moves your company forward.
Yeah.
But instead, you're bogging them down with all of this, you know, I won't call it admin layer because it's not just admin. It's sort of more process driven stuff that is trainable and is delegatable with a bit of
work. Yeah, no, that makes 100% sense. And I was asking because I wanted to see from the time that you didn't do it versus now, what type of differences do you see? Because, and just like, this is kind of like a leading question, because like, obviously we're trying to get people to understand that it's not fluffy, it's not soft. This is something that you do that maybe in some cases it's not ROI trackable or measurable.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases it actually
is.
But yeah, so like what has been the difference? Are there any like metrics or just something
the verbiage around what I would say is that you go from a company spinning their wheels to a scalable platform.
Yeah.
So like all of a sudden, when you get this right, you've built the foundation on which you can scale from. So scaling obviously involves so many different facets, you know, but I think, you know, one of the, particularly startups where they sort of fail actually is, you know, getting product market fit right and then going for it. And you're like,
yeah, hey. Yeah, yeah.
But then your foundation is so not solid that you don't have the foundation from operational frameworks, process and how we do business around the OKR structure, how we all collaborate and then culture to tie that all together. That's your foundation. And getting all of these pieces right does take work. But the result of it is that you build a very strong foundation, which I think does two things. You can scale it quite easily then and safely. And also, if people do leave, you're not all running around like headless chickens trying to wonder what we're going to do because the IP's walked out the door, right? I mean, in my company, we're like, if somebody chooses to go on and do new things or, you know, move to Canada or like do something else. I mean, we're Philippines based. So, but you know, if they choose to go do something else or go be a mom and take time off, like we're not all scrambling going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Cause this person's resigned.
Yeah.
We're like, no problem. We've got a transition plan. You know, we've got our process maps and everything dialed in so that this role can be handed over. Obviously you do lose some IP at the top.
Yeah.
Level, of course, but that's life. You just got to accept that people do move on for different reasons.
Yeah. And in some cases, it's actually you encourage the people to move on because they're so good that, you know, that if they went and started their own thing, they could be great, you know?
Yeah.
And only a strong culture can offer that opportunity. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But I love that you're talking about the foundation, because the other day I posted something. It was like, if you're not intentional about your culture, then you're operating your business in a house of cards. Anything that goes wrong. Yeah. Falls down.
Yeah.
So I know that we're coming up on the top of the hour. So what I want to do, we didn't really go through the questions, but I like this conversation better because it's more conversational. It's learning about the virtual hub. It's learning about what companies need to understand about remote work, building culture in a remote environment. Because one of my pet peeves on that, apparently I have a lot of pet peeves.
So do I.
Yeah, especially whenever it comes to the future of work, because one of my pet peeves is people saying that remote work doesn't work. But in the reality of the conversation, it's not that remote work doesn't work. It's that they haven't identified the infrastructure that they need. And like you said before, it's not just about a software. Obviously, we think Grapevine can help there, but it's also about the culture that you build, because those are the behaviors that you're really pushing forward. And if you don't have those foundations, then you're not going to be around for a long time, you know? So, but before
I'm somebody who runs a scalable, large organization. From anywhere. I mean, I have worked from my children's playroom to a co-working space to, like, you know, literally on top of the mountain. So I just fundamentally believe that, like, and I said, I've been doing this for a decade. Like, I just think that this is a no-brainer, but people still can't seem to get on board with this. Like that you can, people always say to me, how the hell did you do that? And I go, it's actually quite simple. you know. Yeah. But you have to keep it simple, though. Don't go into complexity. You know, keep it simple.
Yeah. That's so true, because in so many different organizations that I go into or that I've been in, the last company that I worked for, I was director of sales operations and sales engineering, but then I also had the OKR hat on too. So it's a lot of hats. Yeah. But what we learned was we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to bring in this consulting group to help us build a sales process and all that kind of stuff. And me and the SVP of sales, we started off in strategy, and then they brought us over to sales because we had some people leave. And we looked at this and we were like, no wonder nobody's doing this correctly, because each slide deck, this is no joke, was 100 slides, slide deck. So for the BDRs, there was 100 slide decks on process, on the account executives, 100, and so on and so forth. And it kept going. So he's actually my founding advisor now for Grapevine, but we looked at this and we were like, let's make this stupidly simple. Like,
yes,
a 3-year-old can understand
it. People don't do it because simple is hard.
That is very true.
Complex is easy, right? I've seen this happen over and over, and I've worked with lots of different people. And when I see people go down into the weeds and into the complexity, I just go, oh, come back out of there, right, for a second. And let's think about what's the objective we're trying to achieve.
Yes.
Because it's this whole first principles thinking and trying to, it's harder to actually come back into simplicity. And often the answer is much simpler.
Yeah.
What people realize. And I've seen, you know, sometimes I used to think maybe I'm too simple. I don't know. But I just think by focusing on keeping, I mean, but like I said, simplicity is difficult, though. You can say mm-hmm. focus on keeping it simple, and then someone makes it too simple and hasn't really, it's not intentional simplicity.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, from that first principles thinking of going, you know, why not? And just keep digging until you get down to the simplest answer. You know,
exactly. Yeah, because you still have to be able to see around the corners and have that business continuity, have that risk management aspect of it, and understand, like you said, if somebody left the company tomorrow at the virtual hub, obviously you would feel some type of way because maybe that person. But at the same time, you would know that you have this whole process coming into place. Whenever a new employee comes on board, you know that you're going to do steps 1 through 10 or something like that. And so like a lot of companies don't take the time to do that. And just to kind of full circle this into remote work, this is where I think that a lot of people are lazy. And I'm not afraid to say it, because the traditional 9-to-5 allowed us to get away with so many things that were bad for the company.
Oh, it's just sloppy. Like, you don't have to.
It's sloppy anything. Is the perfect word.
You can have it all sloppy. In your head, and all your people can have it all in their heads. And then they walk out the door with the IP in their heads. And then, you know, really what you're building when great people come to work with you, I'm not going to say for you, I hate that term. When great people come to work with you, what we're missing is that that's what you're buying. Like, you're paying these people. So what are you actually buying? What you're buying is the IP in their head. You're bringing them in to bring that IP into your company, to bring their ability to, you know, transform or do a job or whatever. And we're not actually optimizing that budget. Your human capital budgets is the one we're not optimizing for.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is we're allowing people to come in with all that IP, do it while they're here, and then walk out the door with all the IP, and you don't get left with the asset, right? You're not building an asset base doing that, right?
Yeah.
The other thing that we're doing is we're not getting all of that IP because we're bogging them down with this support layer type stuff that every company has in every department that needs to be done, but not necessarily by the person you're currently employing to do it. So what you're ending up doing is you're having a human capital budget that is not optimized. Mm-hmm. And not optimized for the now. And then also you're not building that IP asset base while that person is there.
Yeah.
You know,
I 100%. Mean,
look, I'm ex-financial industry. So things like dividends and asset bases and stuff like that, that's kind of my background. But if you want to build something that is scalable, you need that strong foundation. And if you want to build something that is saleable, because at the end, of course, we all want to build an asset. I mean, does it mean even if you decide not to sell it? The asset value of your company is way higher if you actually listen to the things I'm saying, and actually build it this way. This is actually the end game, is that the asset value of this thing that you have is way higher. The better you build the foundation, the better the culture is, the more magnetic it is as a mission. Of course, look at Atlassian. Look at all these amazing companies that have built this. This is what they did.
Yeah.
Listen to any podcast or any of the amazing big podcasts out there. You will pick up these nuggets and you'll start to hear the same vernacular come through around building the asset that is a company. They just word it differently. They just word it around mission and culture.
And I want to circle back, and I know we got to wrap up soon, but I want to circle back to one of the things that you said that I didn't call out earlier, and I wish I would, because it would have been more continuity. But the thing that you said, because you said like mission, vision, that's how people kind of word it. But the way that you at the Virtual Hub go about this, from what you said, is you're actually talking to the employees and you're bringing them into the conversations. And it, you'd be so surprised, maybe not surprised actually, of all the companies out there, especially the larger ones, right? Yeah. Because they think that it's going to take too much time to get input from their employees. But you actually take the time to speak to the people who are going to be doing the processes, who are going to be using the systems, who are going to be using the tools, and then you apply it back into the organization. That's what we did at the last company that I worked for. And it is such a game changer. And honestly, the bar is so low for the employees to feel like they are included. Like, I could literally ask one question a year to an employee and they would feel like this is a great workplace. But periodically,
if you ask what you don't have to do, I mean, we do surveys and things, but surveys can come a bit tiring. So you've got to find a way. We're actively moving this way at the moment. Mm-hmm. You have to find a way to ask interesting questions more often. One question, and not big deep things with lots of answers. Like, polls are brilliant for this, right? What do you think of this idea? If this, what would you do that? You know, and then you can gauge all that. But also what I find very interesting, and I've learned this many times over, and I learned it again when I went to the Philippines recently. You know, I present the problem, and like all the stuff we're talking about also is really good for identifying what is the problem that you have. Like, what's your critical number and what is the constraint that is stopping you reach that critical number? That's a scale methodology analogy. But what I've built helps us to get to the actual problem of what's stopping us get our critical number quicker. Then what you can do is bring your team together and like actually tell them, here's the critical number, here's the constraint, right? And you would be surprised the amount of people who come out of the woodwork going, I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, what about if we did this? And you go, like the pressure it takes off the entrepreneur and the founder is phenomenal, because then they get all excited and you're like, blank canvas, off you go, go build that.
Right? Yes.
Go build something, come back and show it to me. Like, there's delegation 101 right there. Present the problem and let them contribute to the solution to the problem. Because if they believe in the company that they're working for and they like the culture and they love the people they're working with and all that great stuff, they want the company to do well. Of course they do. And they would love to feel like they contribute to that.
You know,
everyone wants that.
Yeah, a term that I haven't heard in a while is employee ownership. And that's exactly what you just described. Is you've
now we could do it better. Like, I'm saying that and I'm like, you know, we ask people, but I don't know if they feel ownership over it. So I'm gonna think about that. I'm glad you said that, because I wanna develop more.
But still, I think that you're ahead of the curve compared to other people, from what it sounds like. And even just you being willing to say, like, we can do it better is something that maybe
you
other people
can always do it better.
Exactly. Well, okay. So I'm going to jump to the lightning round. But before we do that, is there anything that you wanted to say that you haven't been able to speak about so far?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground there. I mean, I think like I say, this future of work topic is, I mean, I love talking about this because I just think it's gone in all different directions, but people are forgetting, you know, the central issue. You know, employees want to blame the companies. Companies are blaming employees. Actually, the problem is actually the same from different lenses.
Yeah.
And the solution to the problem exists in the middle, where employees need to have this way of becoming visible and transparent and understanding that's not about micromanaging. That's actually about trust building. And you can't walk into a role and just assume, oh my, they don't trust me. I'm like, well, no, if you're in a black hole in remote and nobody can see what you're doing, unfortunately, that's not great for trust, right? So,
yeah,
you know, but on the company side, they need to kind of go, we need to invest in the architecture and in the way we do this so that we can just take this location thing out of the conversation.
Yeah.
Just take it out, right? Make it frictionless. Yeah. So that's my soapbox on that. Yeah.
No, that's so true. Yes. Take it out of the conversation and build it where it doesn't even need to be there, but still connect periodically. Yeah,
of course,
100% agree.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. The lightning round. I did not send you these questions on purpose because I wanted you to see them or hear them for the first time here. Okay. So we'll go through them quickly. I've yet to actually go through these quickly. So let's see.
let's
see what we can do. All right. Okay. First question, coffee or tea for those early morning Zoom meetings?
Oh, coffee. Definitely.
Yes. Agree. I am the same way. Have you tried mushroom coffee yet?
No. I'm a traditionalist. I can't mess with my coffee yet. I'm so out there with everything else, but I kind of, you know, 5:30 a.m. I'm just going to go with what I know.
Yeah. I'm addicted to caffeine, so I have to go with coffee too. Yeah. Favorite remote work playlist or music genre?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I don't listen to music while I'm working. I like silence. I always find even when I go walking and things like that, I actually like the silence because I'm quite a big thinker. There's a lot of noise going on there already. I like to get into silence. However, if I am putting music on, if I'm about to go clean the house or do something like that to get in flow, I'm definitely like, I just love some banging house music from the 90s, you know.
Nice.
And the noughties, showing my age now. But I love anything uplifting and, you know, something you can dance to.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, I'm more of like a documentary or podcast person while I'm working.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. In fact, I to all the podcast hosts out there in the world, game changer again for me. I've learned so many things from just deeply listening to lots and lots of podcasts. So
yeah. This is not a podcast necessarily, but there's a course. It's not a course. You don't have to take any quizzes or anything, but it's called Justice. It's a Harvard lecture series with Michael Sandel. Ooh. He's a political philosopher. And so he goes through all these different things. And so if you're a deep thinker, like I am too, like, it just makes you think about things differently and it
and that's
walks you through
in our roles. Yeah. Actually, that's important.
I'll try to remember to send it to you. But if you're not a lecture person, it could be boring. But I'm a nerd.
We'll see.
So, okay, most creative location you've worked from remotely?
Oh, that's interesting because I've worked from some seriously amazing places.
So
I have the luxury because I run the company the way that I do, I choose to live. Most of the time I live in Sydney, Australia, which is, Bondi, anyone who's been here, it is incredible. Like I've been here for 20 years and I still drive down and see that ocean and go, wow, it just never gets old. but I also do spend several months of the year back in Europe and I'm a big skier. So I choose to spend time in the French Alps in a place called Chamonix Mont Blanc, and that's a pretty creative place actually. When you look at those big mountains with white snow, it's a pretty epic place. So ocean or mountain is me. I'm sort of one of those people. Yeah.
I've never been to either, but I have them on my list. So all right. I think we answered this before we started recording. One essential tool or app for remote productivity.
Well, for me, it's Asana, but there are tons. I mean, like we're an enterprise customer of Asana and I've been on that platform for a decade. But of course, there's so many interesting tools coming out, but I think it's a good staple. I think it's a solid place where it's not, people describe it as a project management tool. It started out as that. Now it's like a work operating system tool. You know, we run our whole company on that practically. So yeah, big shout out to Asana. Amazing. Been a game changer for me, and their phone app is amazing. So I can work from my phone. So
exactly. Yeah. I use the same. We just started using it because I was doing a lot of like Google Docs and Google Slides and all that kind of stuff.
We moved off all of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We do it a bit, but like, you know, process maps and all that, we actually have them all embedded inside Asana now.
Yeah.
Everything living, breathing, it's all in there. So there's no confusion around where something is.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. And eventually Don't quote us on this. We might compete with them. Let's see.
Well, Slack is coming in there now too. Slack is trying to do sort of. It's trying to get its act together to not just be a chat tool, because everyone's like, it's so noisy. It's too noisy.
It is. Too noisy. Which is why
people
you
use it for the wrong thing. That's why. That's another soapbox of mine. I'm like, chat is for chat.
Yes.
Asana is for instructions, right? Two different things. You can chit chat over there, but don't, like, once you decide something, put the instruction at the site of the work in the task, in the project, linked to the results, like, so you know what's going on. Yeah.
100% agree on that. How do you combat Zoom fatigue?
We don't do much of it, to be honest. Uh-huh. So how we combated it, actually, we used to have lots of Zoom meetings, and there still are quite a lot of Zoom meetings going on, you know, less for me. But how I combated it was that OKRs blew it open for me, because it reduced the need to have so many update meetings.
Yep.
Because the updates are now asynchronous. So we get these updates. It's great. And then, of course, we use Loom as well. So in our status updates, we started introducing Loom videos. So we can just do a quick, you know, when you don't want to, you know, you write the status update quickly, but then you just do a little demo of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that makes async work. So I can do this from any point in the world, and it doesn't matter what time my team are working. Now, that's a whole other topic. You got to really nail that to make that work properly. You got to be good at that. But it's reduced the Zoom meetings. And then using live dashboards, dashboarding, live metrics, scorecards, all these kinds of tools has reduced the amount of time we need to spend on Zoom calls.
Yeah.
So how we deal with Zoom fatigue is consciously and, again, intentionally asking ourselves, do we need to have this many Zoom calls? Now, you still need the calls, right, in certain areas. But we now say let's have love and connection calls rather than 2-hour long update meetings. We don't need to do that anymore. Then we jump on a Zoom just to discuss a roadblock that we might be having. And also, there's so many things on this. It doesn't need to be half an hour. Like, stop the hour-long thing. Like, you can have a 10-minute, you know, you can do a 10-minute call.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be half an hour. You can just solve the problem and get off the call.
Yeah.
Oh, and one more tip.
No, I like
those that are feeling. For those that are feeling, first of all, like, so the first two are around clearing your calendar, creating space in your calendar. So people feel like, if my calendar is empty, it looks like I'm not busy. Well, that's not true, because you need time for deep work. So clear your calendar, stop with all these meetings, try to structure your company, your way of working, your how of working to reduce meetings, time spent in and around meetings, I would say. And there's a whole philosophy around that. But the other thing is, then think about your energy level during the week. There's nothing as bad as having a lovely clear calendar, but you've got pockets of little meetings all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
There's no deep work time, and you're going to just be spinning your wheels. So then you've got to decide, well, I mean, this doesn't work for everyone, but I did this where I was like, okay, Tuesdays are my big meeting day, because I'm in that energy field all day and I'm like, hammer that. And then I allow time on Thursdays for that. Then Monday afternoons and Friday mornings for me are deep work time, where there's nothing in my calendar. No one's allowed in there.
Yeah.
You know, Wednesday's sort of catch up day. So try to structure your calendar in such a way that you actually have space and time for all the pockets that you need.
Yeah.
Including your gym session or whatever you want to do to get in flow state so that you can access strategic thinking and all those sorts of things. So whole other topic that we could
talk about. True. Like, especially the one where you were saying, like, the spacing out of the meetings in one day, where I hate those, because I want to be able to think, I want to be able to do, and then I want to be able to deliver something. And if there's a only 30 minutes there. Like,
you can't do anything in that 30 minute space.
Yeah. The book.
You can't do anything, really. Yeah.
Yeah. You really can't, because it takes about 29 minutes to get into deep work, according to Flow, the book Flow. And so, like, and also thinking about, like, I mean, we have notifications in Grapevine, so I got to be cautious, but, like, you got to be careful. Yeah. Cause, like, with Slack, for example, like, you're in deep work and then pop, there it goes. Now you got to go check it. And then it's like, okay, well, that was just a notification in a channel.
This actually comes back to your culture as well. And this needs to be driven from the top. So I've actually openly said this on town halls. I'm like, just because I ping you on, we don't use Slack anymore, but like Slack or chat or whatever.
Yeah.
It's because I'm working and I'm not expecting you, especially if you're not actually working. So we're really strict around what is the times that you're working? Because like flexibility is an interesting yeah. one, a whole other thing. We do need a bit of structure there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know when somebody's working. If it's really that urgent, I'll probably send you a WhatsApp message. It was like, and that's very rare.
Yeah.
But I'm
yeah.
not pinging you because I want you to answer me straight away. I'm just pinging you because it suits me to ping you now, because I've thought of yeah. it. And I'm like, just put that in there. It's for you to come back to later. But you have to, again, you've got to say that and communicate.
Yes.
They're like, oh, Barbara's message. I mean, I'm the CEO. So they're going to think I have to yeah. come back to her straight away. And they still do that. And I'm like, don't do that. You just come back to me when it, you know, when it's your time to do that. And if it's yeah. really that urgent, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where to build that culture, you have to repeat it, especially if you're the CEO or founder, because they yeah. are thinking that like, you're just saying that to be nice, but you actually mean it. Because yeah. I do and the
I've
same thing.
I've got to question myself on it too, to go, if I yeah. say that, then I've got to make sure that I, you know, I've got to like steadfastly yeah. say that. And if something, I have to decide how urgent something is. And if something's yeah. really that urgent that you need the person now, that shouldn't be happening. If that's happening every day in your business, you have a bigger problem.
Yeah.
That should be a rare case.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. And I was going to say that with like the meetings too, like both yeah. of these can come into this, this call out where you tell the person, this is how we operate normally. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, there could be that, like maybe we're closing in on a project or we're closing, yes, we're about yeah, to yeah, roll course, out. Yeah. Yeah, like for our product launch, like we were working on the weekends because that's yeah, what you, we had to get collaborating ready for
on. That's collaborating on design. You're like, hey guys, this is going to be a rough period. Let's all, you know, we're all in the trenches together, and you know, that's a moment in time where it's not exactly. every day. It's not business as usual, you know.
That's exactly.
Or a sprint. I think, a sprint is like that, you know.
Yeah, and I think what happens is sometimes maybe those things become a little bit more often, and then over time they kind of become more lax, and then it's like, now we need to do all this all at the same time. And yeah. so yeah, it's like that reiteration.
I think you've and like I said, that's got to actually be led from the top. So I try to actually have intentional conversations with our, especially our leadership team around that, around yeah. protecting their energy, because people in strategic roles, they need to find a way to get into flow state. And like the mm-hmm. brain waves around doing are different from the brain waves around leading and planning
yeah.
and are different to the brain waves of strategic, creative, innovative thinking.
Exactly.
So you need to create space in your calendar. And like our leadership team are still not doing this very well, but I'm trying to encourage them. I'm always saying like, only work a half day on a Friday. And the other half yeah. of the day is actually work, right?
Yeah.
But I want you to go do a hobby.
Yeah,
I want a
yeah.
mandate that you go do a hobby, and that's on your work time, because I do this because that's when my best ideas come, the solutions to problems come, because you're in flow yeah. state. So I fundamentally yeah. believe that as part of the job description in certain roles, we should actually build in, you know, 4 hours a week where I want you to go get on that bike and, you know, do whatever it is that you do. Like, I mean, I go skiing, I do yoga, I yeah. do whatever, but it's important for strategic thinking.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that's where like Google had that 20% time. So on 20% of your time, you're working on something that doesn't have anything to do with your work. And then yeah. you see innovations like Gmail come alive.
Yeah. It lights you up. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah so this is why the lightning rounds never go quickly. yeah. Okay. Let's see. Name one unexpected benefit of remote work for you.
Oh, my children.
Oh,
they don't notice that they get cranky when I'm doing early mornings and things, but I'm there for like, I'm there at the school gate every morning. I'm there for the pickups. I'm there for the play dates, the parties, the activities.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm around.
You know? That's awesome. Yeah. yeah that's
they
cool.
still think I work too much. I'm like, I compared to other people, I don't really work at all. They don't really see it, but that's been a huge benefit for me.
Yeah. They don't know
and,
the other
and
way.
Being able to work from anywhere. Like, so I can, like I yeah. said, I get to choose. Location is largely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's so awesome. And I think that's going to be more and more prevalent, like hopefully, because it's going to be very, very important, especially after the pandemic, you know, where we're seeing some developmental strains on children. I haven't read the full articles out there, but it's going to be important to be around your parents so you can kind of guide them and maybe catch them up on some of things.
You know yeah. what I would say, and this is going to be triggering for some parents out there, because it is for me also. If you really think about life, the job is being the parent. the career is the parenting, right? Because it's, it is, out of all the things I've done in my life, and I've done so many hard things in my life, including launching a business in a country I'd never been to that I knew nothing about. So I've done lots of hard things. Being a parent has been the thing that has challenged me to my core the most. And I've realized that actually that's the job. You need to create all these systems and delegation ability and like map it all and get everything streamlined in the rest of your life so that you can be there and be the steady force for your children, because that is going to be that's going to be demanded of you as a parent. And that's why a lot of parents are struggling now, because they're not able to actually get out of the weeds to be more present. So, you know, and I'm doing it myself. I speak from the heart with this, because I could do that better too. So these are the things that I'm really thinking about these days, you know.
The why of doing it this way.
The why is actually that.
We don't have children yet, but that I'm going to take that and I'm going to apply it to my life.
And like, you know, we hire lots of parents, and I actually think about how does this impact them, you know, and how the way that we work, the types of clients we bring on, how demanding are they, you know, how difficult are they to work with? We try to say, let's bring on clients we like that are easy to work with, that actually do all this system stuff, because it makes everyone's life easier. And then of course we have people remote, and they tell me, the parents that work with us tell me that it's just so great to be able to be around, you know, my kids.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is a huge advantage to, obviously I haven't experienced it yet, but I know just being able to work from anywhere and have them there more than the normal 9-to-5 approach is going to be very beneficial. Okay, this is one of my favorite questions, and I think we'll stop here because we have two more, but I know your time is limited. So remote work pet peeve, speaking of pet peeves, what drives you crazy?
Oh, the black hole of remote. Yeah, people, I can't, I'm going to say it publicly. I cannot stand the people who are online saying, I want to be allowed to work remote, and all these companies mandating back to office. I'm like, yeah, but the problem with a lot, and I've worked with a lot of remote people, they don't get the level of visibility and transparency that you need to elevate to in order to make remote work for both you and for the company. And people call it micromanaging. It's not. It is respectful to the company you work for to be able to deliver on outcomes and results and show, like, people think, oh, I can just go off and do the work and deliver the result in 3 months' time, or God forbid, 6 months' time with no like, visibility in the middle. Like, that's just not going to work. That's so much anxiety for a founder or a CEO or a manager, that the symptom of that is micromanaging.
100%. Well, we will end there. Thank you so much for being a part of the Untangled Vines community. I know that I was able to take a lot away from this, and I know that our listeners will as well. So thank you so much for being a part of this.
It was great. Thank you so much for having me. And I didn't mind that we rabbited on at all. I think they make the best podcasts, to be honest.
Exactly. I'm ready to share it. So thank you again. And we'll see you on the next Untangled Vines podcast.